I'm Dave Miller. This is Think Out Loud on OPB. The shameful story of this country's treatment of Japanese Americans during World War II is pretty widely known. 120,000 U.S. residents of Japanese ancestry, many of them, most of them American citizens, were sent to relocation centers and internment camps. But there is a piece of this history that's gotten a lot less attention. Thousands of those Japanese Americans ended up in farm labor camps all over the West to grow sugar beets for the war effort. Many of them were in Oregon's Snake River Valley. It's a subject of a new exhibit that's on view now at the Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center in Portland. Joining me now are Morgan Young, a consulting historian and curator of this uprooted exhibit, and two sisters who worked on sugar beet farms in Nissa, Oregon during World War II, Aya Fuji and Taka Mizote. It's great to have the three of you in the studio.
Thank you.
Aya and Taka, first, after the attack on Pearl Harbor, your family was taken to what became known as the Portland Assembly Center. It had previously been a place for livestock. Aya, what was that like?
Well, it was pretty amazing. It was a place that when I was young, we went there for rodeo shows, and we thought it was a pretty neat place. But when we were bused there, it was very discouraging. It was we were housed in horse stalls. There was for our family, we had three horse stalls, and with the stench and the whitewashed walls, the animal hairs were sticking out. There was a canvas for a door, and the ceiling, there was no ceiling, so it was all open air.
Taka, what do you remember from that time?
Well, we had lived in Hillsboro, Oregon prior to that, and going to, and we've never moved. I just graduated from high school, but our family owned a farm, and we never was able to take vacations or anything. And in Hillsboro, there are very few Japanese families. And so when we arrived at the Assembly Center, I thought, oh, my, I'm going to have some new Japanese friends.
That was a silver lining.
Right.
That all of a sudden there were a lot of other
right.
Japanese Americans around you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did it happen that that you went from there to a sugar beet farm in eastern Oregon?
Well, our eldest brother, we have three older brothers. Two were inducted in service the first part of the year. And our eldest—
Meaning fighting in the U.S. Army.
Correct.
And they were already members of the U.S. Army by the time the rest of your family was sent to the Assembly Center.
Correct. Uh-huh. But our eldest brother, he was just newly married, but the Eastern Oregon farmers sent out a plea saying, we need sugar beet workers for our fields, and they wanted people who were experienced farmers. So my oldest brother volunteered out. Then in a couple of weeks, he came back and he says, you know, this is much better to volunteer our family and go and help them versus being here and, you know, living under these conditions. And that's the reason.
When he said that, did you get the sense personally that he was right? I mean, were you excited about the idea of leaving the Portland area and that old expo center to go to a completely new place hours away?
Well, not really, because by that time I had met a lot of new friends. Hmm. And the idea of moving away from them was not, I didn't feel that.
Aya, what do you remember from your arrival in Nissa? What were your first impressions of Nissa, Oregon?
Well, we arrived there at night, and we had taken the midnight train, and all the shades were pulled down on the train, and there was an armed guard to protect us, evidently, if there was any problems.
Is that what it felt like, that the guard was protecting you or making sure that you would go all the
problem.
Way to Nissa?
I think that's what it was. But I do remember we had to pull all the shades down. And then when we arrived there, I think the next day we were driven to this tent camp where there was about 100 tents set up, and they were all canvas, and there was it was just the regular tents that housed maybe 3 or 4 people at a time. Our family were issued 4 tents, and one for our parents and the youngest sisters, and one for the older sisters, and one for our brother and his new wife, and one was used for cooking and eating. And it was all wooden floors and just one light bulb hanging in the center. And in the hot weather, you just opened up the flaps, and at night you can see the shadows with that one light bulb.
I want to hear more about what your life was like there, but we should get some context from Morgan Young. As I mentioned, a consulting historian and curator of this Uprooted exhibit, which tells this whole story and has many amazing photographs from this time. Morgan, how did this farm program come about?
This was there was really a national need for laborers in the sugar beet industry. The impetus started in Malheur County. There were 12,000 acres of sugar beets, and there were really no people to cultivate and harvest them. It's a very labor-intensive crop. Aya and Taka can speak to that in a little bit. But the people who had cultivated them in seasons past were now in the military or had gone to Portland to work in the shipyards. So sugar beets were extremely important because they were converted to ethanol alcohol and then used to make munitions and synthetic rubber. Both were crucial to the war effort. A statistic that came out in 1943 was that every time a 16-inch gun was fired, one-fifth of an acre of sugar beets went up in smoke.
Wow.
So we needed thousands and thousands of sugar beets to convert to sugar for the war effort. So in Malheur County, an effort was made to establish a farm labor camp, and that was the camp in Nissa. It opened on May 20th, 1942. It was the first Japanese-American farm labor camp in the country. Dozens more opened. This was a federal program under the War Relocation Authority, the agency that was in charge of the incarceration centers for Japanese Americans. And they operated this program for 3 years, 1942 to 1944, and they issued 33,000 contracts.
How did the rules work of who could work there and how
right.
they were chosen and how who got paid? And I mean, in other words, was this voluntary or was this
sure.
slave labor?
No, it was voluntary. If a state wanted to participate or a local community, you had to issue something to the War Relocation Authority and you had to guarantee several things. First was that you would protect these workers. Second was the work was all voluntary. You could not force anyone to go to these camps. Third was that local wages would be paid. In Oregon, it was 45 cents an hour to cultivate and harvest the sugar beets. Third was any labor that you imported was not going to compete with existing local labor. And the fourth was that you had to provide housing and transportation. And so the sugar companies partnered with state and federal agencies to recruit people. So they would go to the Portland Assembly Center. They had a table. You would review a contract from a farmer. And originally it was single men primarily mm-hmm. and then families. Mm-hmm. And the concept was they wanted Japanese Americans to resettle from the West Coast into the interior of the United States.
Permanently?
Yes.
So this wasn't just a temporary work program to get munitions. This was a larger scale idea of moving a whole segment of the American population.
That was sort of the argument behind the incarceration was the eventual resettlement of people away from the West Coast where they were deemed quote unquote threats.
Aya Fuji, I want to go back to something that Morgan said there, that this was voluntary labor. You were 14 years old when
yes.
this started.
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel to you like this was voluntary labor?
Well, I was too young to know that, but we just went with the family, and this was just something that we just went along with what, you know, our parents wanted us to do. They didn't want us five girls just to be languishing without a purpose, And so I started my sophomore year at NISA High School.
So you were able to go to high school at the local high school?
Right. Mm-hmm. We were bused in separate buses.
Separate buses, meaning for Japanese-American students.
Well, no, I think later on, when we moved to Adrian Camp, it was a bus that bused the whole community.
What was high school like for you?
At first, it was, you know, we were treading on, you know, very carefully, and we kind of stuck together. The Japanese people kind of stuck together. And then we made friends and joined clubs. But I do remember one time I had a good friend, and we became, did things together. And then one day we heard that her brother was killed in the Pacific, and that was the end of our friendship.
Your friend was white.
Yeah.
And at that point, do you know what happened? If her family talked to her, or if she decided
she was going to lump you together with the
Japanese
forces?
I'm sure
that's what it was, that the parents, you know, just went against us, and she just stopped talking, and, you know. But I do remember that very clearly. I was very hurt.
Taka Mizote, we heard from Morgan that the work was very hard to actually to grow and to take sugar beets out of the ground. Can you describe what a day in the fields was like?
Well, we were recruited at the camp by farmers, and they were recruiting people like kids our age. And then they would have farmers would come out and recruit, say, men crew, or like my mother, the mother's crew. And so we were in crews with people our own age. So in that way, we didn't feel the hardship as much.
Because of the social aspect of the group.
Right.
But what was the actual physical work like?
Oh, it was hard. You know, we had to stoop over and top the sugar beets and toss them in the truck. And it was. We picked onions. We topped onions. We picked potatoes. And, early before the sugar beets were grown, we had to thin the beets with a short handle hoe.
Short handle meaning you had to bend over even more.
Well, hoe itself was short handled.
Morgan, why did you want to work on this exhibit?
Well, in July of 1942, Russell Lee went and photographed the camp in Nissa along with three camps in Idaho. And it was part of the Farm Security Administration. It's a federal documentary photography program, the largest in the history of the country. And I had been studying that photography program for about 10 years and came across these photographs in Nissa and didn't know this story of the farm labor camps and thought this seemed to be a very untold story. And I got connected with the Japanese American community in Ontario and then in Portland and realized that people like I and Taka have a very different experience from many others who were incarcerated, because they went from a temporary assembly center to these farm labor camps. They didn't go to an incarceration center like Minidoka or Tule Lake. And so here was this untold aspect and these powerful photographs to go along with them.
Can you describe the photographs of Russell Lee, this documentary photographer hired by the federal government?
Right. So I think many people may not be aware that they're familiar with this photography project. Dorothea Lange worked for this agency, Walker Evans, Migrant Mother is that iconic image from the Great Depression. Russell Lee was not a portrait photographer. He was more of a taxonomist. He would take a scenario and just document every single aspect of it. So from a historian's point of view, they're fantastic because you get all these different scenes that tell a story. And so he took about 400 images of Japanese Americans in farm labor camps. He adds a lot of dignity to the photographs. These are Americans. They're not enemies. And so you see families, and we were able, in working with Ayantaka and others and people in Eastern Oregon, to start identifying people by names. And now you have this backstory of, okay, well, this family, their sons were asked to leave Oregon State College. And so you can get this whole backstory that, in addition to understanding the context of the history of these camps, having these photographs just makes it that much more personal.
What was it like to go through these photographs that Morgan would bring you from this time, from the 1940s, to see all these faces, many of whom you recognized?
Yes, it was very nostalgic, and I was able to keep a scrapbook too, so I had a lot of pictures too, but those were brought back a lot of memories.
Good ones or bad ones?
Pardon?
Good memories or bad memories?
They were good because I was still on the younger side, and it was kind of a fun time for me because we used to work so hard when we had our before the war. We had to work before school and after school.
At the farm in Hillsborough.
Yes. And so, and then we didn't have that many Japanese friends. So this was a fun time for us.
The sort of forced work at the sugar beet farm wasn't as much as what your family was normally putting you through.
Right. Yeah.
Morgan, you said that the federal government's plan, both in incarceration and in the farm work camps, was to really relocate permanently Japanese American families. Did that happen in eastern Oregon in the Snake River Valley?
Yes, there were about – so I said that 33,000 contracts were issued through this seasonal leave program was its official name. About half of the people who participated were able to leave the incarceration centers. And many settled in Malheur County. In 1940, Malheur County had 100 Japanese Americans. It's about one half of 1% of the county population. A decade later, they had 1,500 Japanese Americans, 5% of the population. So it helped create this very vibrant Japanese American community in the Snake River Valley that still exists. So it was a benefit in terms of that. To go back to a second for the photographs, we actually, the three of us, a couple years ago were having lunch and we were looking through the photographs and they identified their sisters and their father in the photographs and we didn't know that they were in there. And we had another gentleman whose daughter found some of the images on Facebook and his family had had 15 images taken by Russell Lee and he didn't have any photographs of himself at that time period because the federal government had seized everyone's cameras in the period following Pearl Harbor. So I think for a lot of people, it's their first time getting documentation of themselves in this era.
Finally, Taka, we heard from Morgan that many Japanese American families ended up staying around there. What happened to your family after the war?
Well, because our farm was owned by my dad, you know, that alien land law. Well, I guess our parents had a foresight in giving the farm to our brother, eldest brother. And therefore, we knew we were coming back. And during that time that we were interned in Eastern Oregon, our two brothers who were inducted in service, during furlough time, they would come to visit us and check on the farm.
To sort of make sure everything was still all right there. And you were able, as a family, to return to the farm in Hillsborough.
Correct.
After the war.
Correct.
And it's still in your family now, as I understand?
Yes. It's going to celebrate their century, 100 years this year.
Congratulations. Aya Fuji, Taka Mizote, and Morgan Young, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Aya Fuji and Taka Mizote are Japanese-American sisters who worked on a sugar beet farm in Nissa, Oregon during World War II. Morgan Young is a consulting historian and a curator of the Uprooted exhibit, which tells the story of this period. Coming up after a break, we're going to talk to the National Book Award-winning poet Robin Cost Lewis.